This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Yes, the Cubby House has returned in our episode we're calling Return of the Cubberwocky. As you may remember, Ryan went on to bigger and brighter things in his career, and Jack had some personal things he had to take care of. So, for a while, and probably for the rest of the season, Cubby House is going to be me and a few other guests every week. This week, we're actually introducing my good friends, and one of which is now a housemate. First of all, hello, Kevin!
Hello.
Now, Kevin helped me move almost a month and a half ago, and he's since moved in with me, but not only did he help me move, two other people also came in to help, and that's partners Derek and Andrew. Hello, guys.
Hello.
G'day.
Now, the whole idea is, since we've been gone so long, we've come along and learnt a lot of things. The main one I've learnt is a lot of moving tips. That's what this show's going to be about today. So, who'd like to start off their little experience? And you may as well have a go at me for taking so long as getting another podcast out.
Yeah, well, I guess your moving day was quite interesting with plenty of family and other friends around and good old mum holding shop for you at the new place. So a few trips back and forth and plenty of boxes and plenty of pieces of scrappy carpet to protect the gear and getting different people to bring different things and trolleys and sack trucks and boxes and rags and
don't
blankets.
Forget that special set of boxes that need to be put away before anyone could see them. Oh. Those ones that never see the light of day, and God help if your mother saw them.
All the things that make the Dungeon Studios in the newly located Cookie Chateau, as it was called on Foursquare, when I had the housewarming.
Yes, there was a Foursquare party happening at the same time. All of us checking in with Foursquare to say, we're here. Yeah. And letting all his neighbours know too.
And it was only like a week after Kevin moved.
It was attack of the iPhone.
Yep. Anyone that doesn't know what Foursquare is, don't worry. You're not part of the iPhone craze. You're still sane. Just carry on.
Well, if you ever come to a party at Cookie's Place, I do have to advise that you ask for the web key for the wireless, because I almost overshot my monthly download allowance in one night. So, thanks. I'll get that off you later.
Okay.
So, but yeah, moving was a fun day. Somehow you managed to get everyone coordinated, everyone there, everyone throwing in hands and putting a nice show on for the neighbours with different desks and drawers and cupboards and stands on the front lawn and having everything piled in and a nice truck that had a very squeaky tailgate.
I swear.
When they left.
Yeah, so we lubricated it well before we gave it back.
Bit of elbow grease in there.
Yep. You can make as many thoughts in your head as you like. It's probably all not true.
Well, the only comment I was going to say was you and your dad really did, you know, get rid of that squeak.
Well, we are trained to do it in our own separate ways. Now, I was kind of packing for a good month or two before I moved, so I was well and truly ready to go.
And you're also putting stuff in boxes at the same time.
But
thank you.
I'm here till
if you're all weak, try the veal.
You kind of made a split decision to move not long after I'd moved, Kevin. What did you come across when you were kind of getting ready to move out from where you were renting?
That when it comes to moving, it is not a good thing to be a hoarder.
And that's not Warcraft hoarder, that's as in taking things and collecting, yeah.
When me and Derek moved from Sydney to Melbourne, we filled a semi-trailer.
A 32-square-metre truck, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yes, and not to mention the trailer that we took in addition.
All the stuff that we didn't want the moving company seeing.
Okay, suddenly I don't feel so bad anymore.
Or the or the work paid for sponsored removalist discovering when the truck broke down halfway between the two places.
Yeah, no, it's happened before. So I've always learnt to keep a few precious things. Anything that's heirloomy, photographs, anything you cannot replace. You take separately from, if you're getting a professional removal, it goes separate to the removal truck. Really good tactic, basically.
We also found that removalists, if you ask them to pack your boot collection with extra care, they look at you very weird, but then tissue wrap each boot separately.
And we get gawk stares from Kevin.
Well, yes. Did you give them your phone number? Because clearly they understood what you meant.
Oh, they understood what we meant because the day they came around to do the quote, I was expecting to be there by myself, and the guy showed up about half an hour earlier. And Andrew and another acquaintance at the time, titled Slave, were walking out the front door going for breakfast as this guy was knocking on the door. And yes, there were some interesting repercussions of that one. Mainly over-quoting on the move, but yes, he got the idea fairly quickly as to what was going on.
Have you had many attractive removalists?
Yes and no. I've had repeat customers with two separate moves, which is quite weird, actually. A previous partner of mine in Sydney, we moved to Canberra, and when me and Derek moved to Melbourne, I got the same packers back for that removal. It was really quite weird. Then that was like 5 years apart. So that was weird. But what was funny when we actually got to Melbourne, we were about four hours into them unpacking the truck, and there was about five guys that were unloading the truck. And one of them kind of just, I heard them offhand say, "We've only brought one bed in," as if like, "Where's the other one?"
And then I think a few minutes later, the next box came out that said Derek's side on it, and then the box after came out Andrew's side, and then they worked out, oh,
there's only one bed. things got very quiet after that.
So when it comes to packing your gear, you guys obviously use removalists
only for the big move.
Yeah,
little moving around suburbs have been pretty much ourselves with big trailers and big cars and big beefy blokes.
Is there anything you've kind of deliberately done in terms of keeping things aside, apart from obviously your valuables you put in the cars and all that sort of stuff, but is there a way you guys pack in terms of how you organise boxes?
Andrew governs that one, so he may want to field that question.
I'm a veteran of moving house, having two parents working in the Air Force. I've moved house dozens of times, and that's kind of led to me having itchy feet, and I've never lived, except since being here in Melbourne, I've never lived in the same house for more than about 18 months. So, yeah, I've done a lot of packing, and I've gotten away with very few breakages. There's some... The big tips are big boxes filled with light stuff. Small boxes filled with heavy stuff.
What about books, for instance?
Yeah, don't put them in the big ones.
Yeah, well,
you cannot lift them up. You really cannot lift them, even with a sack truck.
You actually gave me a whole heap of small boxes. Roughly what dimension were they, just for books?
Oh, just for books? They were about the size of two large boxes of cornflakes, say. Big, but two stacked on side by side. Mm-hmm. That's how big you pack your boxes full of books. You put in maybe a little kind of paperback novels. You'll get maybe 20 in a box.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you can carry maybe two or three of those boxes on your own,
mm-hmm.
just with your hand, but on a sack truck you can take about five and it's manageable.
Yep.
And you won't injure your back.
That's coming from a librarian's perspective, I hear.
Yep, that's how we receive them into the library. That's the size of boxes that we get books into the library when we're getting a big order. They come in those small boxes. And we had a weight limit of 20 kilos on any box.
Mm-hmm.
And any box that was over 20 kilos actually went back to the supplier. We didn't even open it. But even that's like the small boxes can get up to 20 kilos. But what you put in the big boxes is your stereo padded with pillows. Or you use them to pack your crockery. But some people pack them like to stop breakages with your plates and glasses and all that kind of stuff. That's what most things get broken. And yeah, you just need to use a lot of paper. So a layer of grass wrapped,
mm-hmm.
a layer of crushed paper.
Yep.
Layer of glass, crushed paper. And you end up with a fairly light box in the end.
Yep, so cool. Something I learnt having moved a lot of my family was you have a special box which you take on the first move if you're getting family and friends to come help you and whatnot, and that is the coffee box. Mm-hmm. It has your kettle, some spoons, and some cups, as well as your sugar, tea, coffee. Because as I've found, when you are inviting friends and family to help you, if nothing else, you at least have a box ready to offer them a coffee as soon as they get there, as soon as they leave. Keep the coffee flowing, and you'll have happy people helping you, generally speaking.
And along the same lines is you have your smallish box, not bigger than those, bigger than the ones you pack your books, is it, your books in, but it's your very brightly labelled scribble all over in big red texter. It's the last box that goes on the truck, so it's the first one that comes off. And it's your... You pack it with things that you just... You know you're going to need on the first day. So, your texters, Stanley knives, sticky tape, nails, screws. All these kind of things that you don't think of until you've moved into your place and you go, oh, I need this. And you go, oh my God, where's that box that has that, and you can't find it, and you inevitably don't get to it until about 3 weeks later, if you're like me. So having that emergency box, or the first open box, it has everything. Once you've moved a couple of times, you learn the things you really need in there. It's a godsend to have.
Okay.
Just another item for your first open box. Probably two sets of plates, two sets of cutlery, because you know, you're going to need something to eat off.
Unless you get fish and chips, then it comes in its own plate.
No, pizza.
Pizza, yeah.
Or pizza, yeah, but you get sick of pizza after the first week.
We might just have a list of everything that you've got in mind for the first open box on the blog.
That's a good idea.
What about in terms of money? Because we're looking to move house. What are the things you kind of have to budget for when you know you're going to move house? Be it rent, be it buying a house, whatever.
Please, my moves were absolutely tiny. I moved suburbs. I rotated around Melbourne.
All right. Kevin, what were some of the things you had to organise when you moved house?
The big thing that kind of hit me and really, to a certain degree, ticked me off was the fact that I went online and booked a truck. It was a one-ton truck from said rental place. And they quoted me 180 and went through all the terms and conditions. Everything was fine. 180. By the time it actually came to... paying the bill at the end of the day, I ended up paying $260. There were all these extra things that they didn't bother to put on the quote. Stuff like that. There was extra costs if you went over a certain number of kilometers. Everything like that just sort of hit us, and the guy at the counter just automatically went, yep, that'll be $260, and I kind of went, what? So yeah. Budgeting-wise, I would always put, say, a spare $500 away just in case of rainy days, in case, you know, something like that hits you. God forbid you, in packing, end up injuring yourself. You have spare cash to run to the pharmacy and buy something if you need something. Common sense things.
Slush fund.
Yeah.
That just reminds me. That's another thing that goes in that emergency box.
First aid kit.
Each tablets. First aid kits and all your pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And Band-Aids. And things like that.
Because the unexpected will happen. You are torturing your body, moving thing from one location to another.
And you will get a headache.
Pizza money and beer money.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, next time I move, I'm going to put money away to have a masseuse come to the house afterwards and just sort of service me, and then he can go and I'll be happy.
Happy ending.
No, that costs too much.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at moving, you've really got to allow money to be generous to those that help. Just shout some food. It makes a big difference if someone knows they don't have to worry about how they're going to eat if they're moving with you or helping you move. Same as I said, esky full of beer, some drinks for afterwards or a couple of Red Bulls or something along the way. It's those things that you don't think, because you'll put the bills in your head. You'll go, yep, I need to pay for this. Or if you're buying, the conveyance has already done all that. So you're really not focusing on what you need on the day. What you really need is to know where your shops are so that you can actually say to someone, look, I'm busy unpacking this. I need a new tray for the barbecue. And can you run down the shops and be able to just say, down there, down the corner, here's $10, go and grab it, and let them know. So you've got to delegate, but if you ask them to delegate, just throw them a couple of bucks to help them out.
Well, you mentioned shops, something just came to mind as well. If you're looking to move and you've kind of got a know of where you're going, do a bit of research and actually run around the place beforehand and get to know the location before you actually move there, because when it comes to moving, you will need to know where some things are or how far away your train stations and all that sort of stuff is if something happens.
Find your local doctor.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
And that's one of the hardest things when you move places, especially if you move states or cities or even just a long distance. The days you're not feeling well and you do need a doctor, it can be hard to find. And, I mean, some people have a family doctor for life, and that's well and good if you grow up, live and stay in the one location or within 10Ks of the one location for most of your life.
Mm.
But when you've moved major cities three times and around the place and halfway across these cities as well, you just can't afford to do that. And it does take you quite a while to either find a doctor you're comfortable with or a practice that can work how you're used to it, and also getting friendly with the chemist on the other side.
Getting friendly, eh?
That's it. The chemist in the town that we're in, they know all their customers. They're very good with them.
And they're the only chemist. Of course they know their customers.
That's right. and it does make a bit of a difference. So they know what to expect, and it makes life easy because they can advise you on different things. But getting to know the doctor is a big thing. The first doctors I went to in town were pretty homophobic, and they couldn't understand a concept of another guy being in the room with you that wasn't anything more than a friend. And that really doesn't put you into a good healthcare frame of mind. And usually when you do go to the doctor for the first time in a new place is when you're not feeling the best. It's not for a routine checkup or a sore throat or something simple. It's probably because you put your back out while you're moving. So you've got to, you just got to understand, talk to your friends, other people that live in the area, see who they go to or see what's around and understand the conditions, see if they bulk bill or they charge. And if they do charge, then, as you were saying before, keep an extra 20 or 30 bucks to cover that gap in your pocket just in case you need to go to the doctor or whatever. But it is an interesting thing when you move place. The comforts that you take for granted and maybe only call on once every 6 months, you'll find yourself possibly needing them fairly quickly.
Hmm.
Talking about comforts, a not quite so rare one you want to have every day from the very first day you move in, and that's a comfortable bed. And after we successfully moved everything, all of Cookie's stuff in, we'd had dinner, we were all relaxed, I took Cookie aside and I said, look, mate, I'll come and help you, but I really advise get your bed made now. Get it put together because it hadn't been done yet. Get the sheets. Get the sheets. That's something you put in your first to open box.
Yep.
Put your favourite sheets. A nice warm blanket. Know where your pillows are. And get somebody to help you set up your bed that very first day, because you don't want to have to have after sitting down and relaxing for a couple of hours after the move's been done to then get up and go, oh, crap. I've got to make the bed, and not just make it, I've got to put the bloody thing together. So, yeah, and you don't want to do that on your own. So, always get someone to help.
The other thing as well is, though, put time aside to sort of go, right, at 9 o'clock at night, that is it, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to stop. Because fair enough, there's a lot of things that you need to get done on that first day, but there are a lot of things that don't need to get done on that first day. And some people need to learn to switch off.
Yes, I'm guilty of that. And I still get up even, 7-8 weeks here. I get up and I don't have breakfast. I just get up and I start cleaning. I start fixing. I've got to that point now where there's just so much stuff to do. You forget to stop and even have the simple things such as breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Before we get off budgeting, though, there was something that was instilled in me even before I moved out of home. And that was have an emergency fund. At the time when I was renting, I set up a $5,000 emergency fund. So if the fridge went or anything just packed it itself in, you need to replace it, $5,000. For those that are probably buying a house, I now recommend $10,000 minimum, if not more, because you've got a lot more things to take into consideration, such as hot water services and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, and if you buy a house, it's guaranteed the hot water surface will blow up within 12 months. Guaranteed. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that have exactly the same experience as
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Yeah, noted. You know, if it happens now, you've jinxed it. It's going to be your fault.
In terms of repairing and upgrading and whatnot, there's always going to be something in the house that's going to change. whether you're renting or buying, new house or old, there's always something that's going to be done. In terms of renting, there are some small things one could do if they're skilled enough with a screwdriver or a pair of pliers or something along those lines. There are other things beyond and above one's capabilities or responsibilities, and that's where the owner has to come into account. One thing we should all do when we're talking to our agents or the owners, please have it in writing. Mm-hmm. And why do we have it in writing?
Because if you have to go to the tribunal, you've got it in writing, and that's the only form of evidence they will take.
And they tend to respond to it much nicer as well. We had an issue up in Sydney with a sink that it was a brand new kitchen in a very old apartment where they'd refitted out between tenants. And most sinks tend to let the water drain towards the sinkhole. This one tended to let water drain off the board back towards the fridge and anything furthest away from the drain hole. And as soon as any water went over the side, it went into the cupboard below. So something minor, you think, yeah, fair enough. We'll just let them know that there's going to be water damage or the potential for. And you let them know by phone. They send someone out. They touch a few screws. They say, yeah, it's all fine. Nothing fixes because the whole level is still screwed. So then you proceed to the writing. You send them a letter letting them know what's happening. And then in those letters, you state that you'll be following it up in so many days. And it's amazing that you actually get a response back when you start knowing what the rental acts all say and forcing that on the agent. You do actually get some results from that. And I think we got that one fixed after quite a while, but only after a letter.
Yeah, and if when it comes to emergency repairs, broken windows, things like that, sometimes it's hard to get hold of the agent because they're actively avoiding you.
Isn't there a rule as well with emergency repairs, though, that if it's under $1,000...
You can get it done yourself.
Usually. You can get it done yourself and then charge the real estate agent. Obviously, incredibly difficult to do that, especially if you're, say, a student or something like that, and you don't have the $800 to lay out to have something done. But it's good to keep in mind. If it is something that's life-threatening or anything like that, you can do something about it. You don't just sit there going, oh, poor me, what can I do?
It is the agent's responsibility to provide a safe and habitable, secure premise for you to reside in. So if it's not safe, secure, then you've definitely got grounds for maintenance.
Just like you have responsibilities, you have rights as well.
Something that also enforces the point is not just something in writing, but something in the form of photos in terms of what the before and after shots, mm-hmm. if necessary. Mm-hmm. Because if anything does happen, they can be date stamped, etc. as well.
So. And just make sure you use a clean memory card when you do those.
Well, you never know. You might become incredibly friendly with your estate agent after that.
Yes, you don't want the odd... home photo slipping in.
Oh, kind of same thing. If you're leaving a rental property and you're doing your final inspection, as we found with our place up in Sydney when we left, well, I'm an experienced renter and I don't let the wool get pulled over my eyes very easily, but they will try it on every bloody time.
And hello to our New Zealand listeners.
When it comes to an inspection, they will always try and pin, oh, that's dirty, we're going to have to get that cleaned. There's a crack in that window.
Or my personal favourite, that isn't covered by general wear and tear.
Yeah, and that's the thing they say, it's not covered by general wear and tear. But the law says what a reasonable person would consider wear and tear. And what it takes into consideration is the age and the quality of that building or whatever, if it's how it's fitted out. And what damage has occurred to it. So, yeah.
I think we've all been bitten by real estate agents in the past.
I'm so picky when I do the initial inspection. I take 3 hours going through every room, writing down every single little thing.
And there's a few things that you can do. Bunnings sells some fantastic room deodorizers and not the kind of stuff that you get from your favorite shop on Hoddle Street either. There's industrial carpet cleaning, industrial odor remover, industrial everything from the big hardware store. Oh, and those things are spray some room odorizer on your light bulbs so it warms up and everything smells so nice in the house that sometimes they don't notice the broken soap dish that's been glued together with the sponge sitting on top of it when they do their inspection.
Yes, because, you know, that's all we need. Our favorite hardware store to sell something, you know, deodorizer-like. It's bad enough going into the places like that. I don't need that sort of thing there as well.
So yeah, the basic list, don't be pushed over by your landlord, basically. Push back, because if you push back and state your rights, they actually don't. They'll only push the case when they know that they've got a case.
Yeah, but by the same token, I think I must be one of the exceptions, because the landlord I had was a really respectable person who was quite happy for me to, because I was happy to do a few minor repairs, that was fine. The house I had was, for those who might have seen the photos, there was a big crack above where I'd had the sling sitting in the roof.
There's a big crack below the sling most of the time too.
Yeah, I know. And that was due to the, when it was built about 10 years ago, and because of the drought, all the foundations were sinking and warping and the house was basically breaking apart, but at very small increments. And I'd mentioned that along the way. He knew about it. He was happy to work with it. And the 2 years I'd stayed in that place, I walked out without a single problem. The only argument they had after their final inspection was the shower was still a bit grimy. That's fine. Go back, clean it. There wasn't any problems.
Yeah, it's saying what I've said, I've also had really good landlords.
Yeah.
Fantastic
landlords.
You
get your good ones, and the ones that start trying to treat you less than, push back. When you're buying your first home, I found a really nice place, which is now, as we said before, called the Cookie Chateau. The price I bought it for was comparatively cheap, had two things not been done. And it's one of two things that I think really sells a lot as far as a house goes. One is the painting. Admittedly, this house is very multicolored as it is, so it has to have a redecoration over the next couple of months. The other thing, and the most prominent thing, was the garden. What's some of the things that you guys would look for when you go into a house in terms of the gardening?
I try and picture the place without the garden, because if you're buying a house, it's your house. You can do pretty much what you like with it. So if you're not considering what the garden looks like now, you need to think about what you might like the garden to look like. So wipe the slate clean if you can. If you can do it in your head, that will make a big difference. Like with the place we bought, it took two visits to kind of strip away and be able to go, okay, I'm not looking at that garish colour on the wall. I'm looking at the structure of the house and what I would do with the space.
And I'm not looking at the backyard that's been trodden down by a sheep, kids and trampolines. I'm looking at what that could be and the gradient of it, what can be placed where, and what it can do for me in a few years' time, as opposed to what it's doing for the people there now.
Well, I guess some of the things that you would be keeping an eye out for, really obvious drainage problems. Is there anywhere where water's pooled and not drained away?
Or some of the places I've seen, the spouting.
Yep.
Evident cracks or whatever. I've even seen one house where they've had to redo the windows, because if you look at all the edging along the windows, or the wood's warped because it's actually drained out of the spouting and down into the wall cavity.
Yeah, there's a few tricks.
All right. Structural, you touched on it before. Structure-wise, what are some of the things that you've seen in the past that bring to mind when you look at houses? What are you looking for in terms of poor structure?
The big one that I look at, especially if you're just driving past, especially if it's a tiled roof as well, you look at the roof line. If the roof line has got any obvious bows in it, any area where it drops down in the middle, where it sags, where the line that should be straight isn't, stay away. Just stay away. It usually means there's some subsidence or there's some white ants or something like that in the place. And if the roof line is stuffed, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. That's one good one to look forward to. And you can do that from the street without even going in.
So before open inspections and all that sort of stuff, right. Yep. Do a drive-by, yep.
Have a casual look under the house if you can. Depending on where you are, you're looking for concrete piers, not wooden piers. Now, if you're going for an older place, it's unlikely that you'll get concrete piers, but
stumps.
Look at the condition of the of the stumps. Is there any ant? Is there any termite cappings? Is there enough ventilation? Is it musty? Is it damp? They're the enemies. Dampness, poor air circulation, termites are the enemies of houses.
All right. So you looked out and around the roof line, underneath the stumps, spouting. Walk in the door. Where would your eye draw to first?
The wet areas, usually. Kitchens, bathrooms, toilets. They're usually the areas where you'll get moisture ingress into places, mold, unhappy little things living around the place. And they can also be the most expensive things to repair.
You mean kids?
Yeah, those two. I mean spiders.
Kids aren't incredibly expensive to replace. They're expensive to maintain.
Yeah.
Spiders.
Especially all that soundproofing you have to do in the rooms.
Oh, yes. What, in terms of the wet areas, would tell you it's not worthy of having? What specifically would you be looking at?
Are you looking at the condition of the floor and the walls? Just making sure that there's no major damage. I mean,
in terms of warping floors or...
Yeah, exactly.
Black mold's a bad one to look for.
Yeah, just even the air ventilation and sunlight into the room, just so that it can clear out, especially if you're asthmatic. I mean, one of the things that we saw in our place was a little bit of mold on the skirting boards, and that pretty much turned out to be, it was just, it gets damp in winter, the condensation goes in, and I always get screamed at for not turning the fan on. And so it's just simple things like that may prevent it, but if it's fairly catastrophic, make sure you've got good air ventilation, airflow, make sure that the water doesn't sit anywhere, and make sure it drains away.
And make sure you like the colour.
Mm-hmm.
Because tiles are a bitch to remove. And then you've got a tile over top, blah, 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 blah.
It's yeah. Expensive. As a tradesman, one of the first places my eyes go to is the roofline. Around, you know, where all the cornices are, where it all meets, ceiling meets walls, looking for cracks, bows, anything that...
Stains.
Anything that resembles the walls and not holding. Again, one of the beauty of places I saw, not just... It wasn't the roof line, it was actually the floor line around where the skirting was. The floor had separated completely, and you could tell the house, again, like my old place, was actually warping. And that was quite common in this area for any house that's been built within the last 10 years. Anything beyond 10 years, I've found, tends to structurally sit better. But that's one of those things I look for amongst being PowerPoints and all that sort of stuff, which you can change and cover up. But if you're not licensed to and you can't afford to do it, have a look at where they're sitting and picture yourself as if you were living there already, where you'd put things and how it'd work for you.
Of course, there's all those unexpected, you know, things that you don't quite expect, like... going to turn your shower on at some point in time and, you know, electrocuting yourself. Those small little things, you know.
Yes. Make sure the gas is running. Make sure things work because it's no point.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of things work.
Yeah. Go on.
Hot water pressure. Test it out because it's a big thing. Even places I rent, I always test out the hot water pressure because I hate really bad hot water pressure.
And that brings you to the other note of going around, turn every tap on, turn it off, flush the toilets, make sure they refill, all the dirty stuff that no one ever talks about, because they're the stuff that when you need it, it's got to be functioning.
I've even found when you go through open inspections, talk to the people who are walking around with you, like not just with you, but who are also looking at the house as well. Make comments to each other, because sure, you're going and you're going to be competing against them in the end, but... they may say something that you might miss and you might want to go check and make sure that you really want to go there, because open inspections give you, 15 minutes at most to walk through?
If you can wrangle it, try and get a private inspection.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Always good.
And stand your grounds. It's not nice if the vendor is there when you're looking through a place. It just makes it uncomfortable because you can't speak freely.
One thing that we did with the places we were looking at in our town is we went by the places at different times of the day.
Yeah.
Without the agent, just sat outside parked out front, wound down the windows and had a listen.
Get to know your neighbourhood.
Yeah, like what are the sounds like on a Friday night, on a Saturday night?
Is there constant freeway noise going in the background?
Yeah, go there late at night. go there at 12 o'clock where everything's quiet and you can pick everything up that's going on around you.
Can you smell the fish and chip shop down the corner or...
or the chook farm 3 kilometres away in a bad wind. It's things like that that you don't find out until you move in unless you spend a little time and do some homework.
One other thing from a geeky techno bear perspective who might understand telephones and stuff and internets and stuff. Check to make sure you can get broadband because if you don't have it, you're socially isolated.
And how do you check to get... to see if you can get broadband?
Well, one of the good ways is to ask the vendor for the phone number of the place, or and then you can put that one through, or you can be creative and look for a shop or the corner shop that's not far away, find its phone number in the white pages and put that into a online checking tool. That's a good way of doing it. And then work out roughly what that says. Or you can ask if the agent, if the person there has already got internet, and ask them who they're with or what plan they're on or what they can have, and take some comfort in that. But be creative and don't be socially isolated or go wireless. But that's often quite a more expensive option than just having some decent DSL.
Yeah, and with wireless... it's not always consistent. Like it's I find for me it tends to drop out.
It's a shared network.
Yeah, it tends to drop out a hell of a lot more than a wired system would.
So not good if you like Cookie, who gets addicted to WoW in spurts.
Yes, well, I'm off WoW for a little while. Ever since I've been on in his place, I've been off WoW. You can all throw celebrations.
So there's no little orcs running around the house at the moment.
Not yet.
I wouldn't say that.
Not yet, but we do have the occasional troll walk through the door.
Don't talk about your mother like that.
Charming. Besides, his mother's not quite tall enough to be a troll. She's more of a gnome. Besides, we're actually kicking it old school at the moment. We've gone back to Warcraft 3.
Woohoo, land parties.
Yeah. See,
you got to remember, Kevin is the first person I've ever lived with outside of my family. So it's fun now that I've got someone to live in the house with. We can actually have LAN parties.
We're sorry, Kevin.
What do you mean? I'm the one that's encouraging it. What are you trying to say, Derek?
Nothing.
Oh, kind of thing to look out for. Have you got access to making Ethernet ports around your house if you're a tech inclined?
Like we're just currently running around our place at the moment.
Trying to do.
Yes.
Yeah, running things through walls suck. So if you can get under the floor, much easier. If you can drop it down from the ceiling, much easier. But trying to run new cables, not pretty.
Or if you got somebody who's licensed to do it and get them to do it telephone-wise on the side, yeah.
Oh, and that kind of leads to the absolute bane of doing exactly that in terms of running cables anywhere in a house is insulation. If you can find out what the insulation rating is in the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
which is usually pretty easy to find out, but if you can find out what the insulation rating is in the wall and try and find a house with the highest rating you can get, because your bills are going to be cheaper in the long run, much, much cheaper.
Yep.
And you'll be more comfy.
Yeah.
Yay.
But yeah, internet, it's the one thing you don't usually think about because you can quite often take it for granted. That it's just going to be there. Maybe not.
Very much true. Very much so. Finally, you've moved in, you've unpacked, you've invited all your mates around for a housewarming party. Fair enough, if you've only just moved out for the first time, you probably haven't got a lot of things. What are some of the things that you would expect or you would go out and to get for somebody who's just bought a house? What gifts would you get?
I've got two attitudes towards this, and it depends on how well you know the person and how you see yourself sitting with knowing their tastes and understandings. And one of the things is, most often, if they've got some form of family or support group, they'll have a lot of hand-me-downs and second items from other people. So don't try and second-guess that. If you don't know, help them out with a housewarming by giving them your time and your energy. And then once you know they're settled in, give them a settled-in present or something to say, yeah, look, you're here now, I really know what's going to help, rather than, oh yeah, here's a cheese board or here's a cactus or here's something that's like kind of pretty now, but doesn't really help. Or on the other front, Gift vouchers.
Yeah. And the more generic you can get, the better. So get a Westfield's gift voucher or a...
JB Hi-Fi one.
Woohoo! No, but so that's forced me to go JB. It's like,
yeah.
Bunnings would probably be good if somebody's just moved in, but the more generic you can get, like the Coles ones or the Coles Meyer ones where you can use them in a lot of different places is a good idea.
I agree, but I also disagree on that one because going generic means they'll generally buy something they need to top their house up and do a job here or there. If you go specific, quite often it can mean that they'll buy something for themselves rather than for the house that they can then enjoy in the house.
The reason I pose this question is, for those that know, I've already got everything because I'd rented already. I then went and got, and I'm not saying I wasn't thoughtful, but I got yet another set of dinner plates. Now, I'd already had dinner plates and everything, and the thought was nice and they will be used. But I thought, once all said and done, I actually appreciated the gift vouchers from, say, Retrovision, so the electrical wholesalers, the white good wholesalers, because I've got a big enough place I can get a bar fridge. And the person that I actually asked was very specific, and I was grateful. But it was, I found the Bunnings vouchers and the white goods vouchers are probably going to help me in the long run over yet another set of dinner plates. And that's why I wanted to ask you guys, because I found those that got me those sorts of things that I probably won't use straight away didn't ask, yet those that did ask, I'm going to use, and I know I'm going to get them.
And for me, dinner plates are almost personal items. Depends what they're decorated with. The last thing you want is a nice dinner plate set with pretty flowers around the side or some really tacky sort of logo on it or something kind of inappropriate for family, like guys playing leapfrog all over the place.
Yeah, so it's fine if you've asked the person and that's what they've said they want, but I reckon if you're going out and getting something for somebody, you either get, I've personally either got one of two things, candle set, something that's lively, it's decorative, but it's not necessarily personal, or a gift voucher because I know that they're going to be needing something from this store or along these lines in the near future. And rather than them wasting their budget trying to get it, I'm going to put a contribution towards it.
I guess it comes down to also how well you know the person. So, yeah. Like if you're an artistic type, then you might want to give them something that you've created. That's always something. If you know the person, you know that they're going to like it, then that's always nice.
Well, and here's another thing. For a housewarming present, would you give somebody a ticket to the next concert that you were going to as well? So, you know, you kind of bought a ticket for them as a housewarming present.
It's a housewarming present? That's probably, I wouldn't call that a housewarming present.
No, that's what I thought.
Nice present, but not a housewarming present.
Then again, it's also nice to be away from the new house every now and then. So it's an interesting little distraction that could be quite welcomed.
Yeah, I guess it could depend on the person. Like, if somebody was getting up and not having breakfast and spending all their spare time tinkering around the house, that
a bit of
somebody's trying to suggest, get out of here!
And
I want to do something else!
Nothing quite says, welcome to your new house by, oh, I need someone to come to a concert with me. Here you go.
Anything else? Just one last thing. Remember to, when you get the fridge out of the truck and it's in place, plug it in, push it in, don't turn it on. 24 hours for the gas to settle, especially if the fridge has been turned on its side.
And please clean your fridge out before you move it, just so that all the liquid and stuff doesn't run everywhere and damage all your boxes.
And go over your feet and legs. And
not to mention the smells. It smells pretty horrible even after about 48 hours without being opened.
Same as washing machine cables as well.
Yes. One thing, going back a few steps to the commercial removals, one thing, some tips is that they do not accept food. You cannot pack food. You cannot pack anything that's been opened.
I thought you meant as payment.
Yuck. Here, Mr. Removalist, I'll feed you something.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's that? You feel sleepy now? Well, let me just lay you down here quickly.
Boom, shakawawa.
Strap you in.
Yeah, so you've got to either try and use up as much food as you can or take it yourself, but they won't pack it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've labelled the box that says food or that says laundry detergent or whatever, they won't take it on the truck.
Or petrol.
Or petrol. No, they won't take that.
Or bleach.
It's basically any food or chemicals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. I'm trying to think of other things that they won't take. Pets! It's kind of obvious, I guess. But
bodies. Don't bother trying to get them to move the bodies from one location to another. If you're a trophy collector, take your trophy in your car.
Plants. That's the other thing they will not take.
No, they plants. Took plants down for us. They put each pot plant into a big box.
We had to take them, didn't we?
No, they brought our plants down.
Well, check with your removalists, because I've had removals where we haven't been able to take the plants.
Yeah, sorry, I'm with him on this one. I've got an accent every now and then, and boy, does it annoy me when people decide to correct me. I'm like, I'm saying it correctly.
It's still a plant.
I know what this podcast is missing. Things that we can throw at each other.
Or OH&S announcements. Watch your back, lift with your knees, bend correctly, keep things within a safe and manageable weight, get a friend to help you as well. If it's too heavy, watch yourself going downstairs, watch yourself going around corners, use sack trucks and lifting devices where you can.
Plan the move in terms of if you're lifting something and moving, talk about how you're going to do it rather than trying to talk about it while you're lifting the 200 kilo fish tank.
Something I've found both with my move and Kevin's move is the person who you are moving, don't expect them to know how to do every single little thing. Delegate somebody to get what you want out as in order. Delegate somebody to pack the truck.
A skill in its own.
Yeah, I know. A rule I've always had, particularly with my father and all the way through the Scouts, is whoever is driving the truck should be responsible for how it is packed. Because then they know which side to be mindful of when they're going around corners.
Oh, but it's also along those lines, I would find someone who knows or has worked in the removal industry, even for a short amount of time in their past somewhere, or that does deliveries, that works with kind of bigger trucks all the time, and is always constantly packing them. And they have the knowledge as to how to distribute the load, where the heavy stuff should go, how to tie it down so it doesn't move.
Yep, yep.
Are we still talking about Cookie's bedroom again?
So something was told to me by my brother-in-law, who was once a removalist. Most breakages occur moving the shortest distance because people are complacent.
And the same would go for the most accidents occur 5 kilometres from your home.
Exactly.
And that's one reason why Andrew still keeps every box from every major item somewhere in the shed.
Yep. Oh, that's actually a really good tip. If you can keep your television box and the inserts that go in there that it was packed with, like the foam or the styrofoam, if you've got the room to keep them, it makes moving your removalist, if you're paying one, will love you because they don't have to pack it. It just goes in the box and they know it's safe.
Well, same thing could be said for just boxes in general. If you're renting and you know you're likely to move around a bit, keep the boxes.
For some people it's not possible because you just don't have the room. But if you have, all within reason, like, it gets to a point where the box has gotten, is no longer suitable. It's actually doesn't protect the item anymore.
Yeah, it's worn and
it's used. Worn out. But yeah, that's a tactic I've found very useful. Very useful. Oh, and IKEA furniture does not come apart. Don't try and pull it apart because it won't go back together again the same way ever.
No.
Never.
That's a strictly one-way deal.
Yeah. Some of the biggest decisions we made in terms of how we chose our house was it's just the sustainability of the house. So lots of insulation, a wood heater. Sounds counterintuitive that you think burning wood is bad for the environment, but it's actually not. If you get the wood from a sustainable source, it's both cheap. It's very efficient heating if your house is designed the right way.
You can use the ash in the garden.
Yep, and it's a bit more self-reliant as well. So, like, if something that's happened here in Victoria, the Longford gas crisis, where there was no natural gas available in Victoria or very limited supplies, having multiple sources of energy available to you is something that would be advantageous. So, if you've got if you've got the trifecta of having gas, electricity, and a wood heater, fantastic. But go for at least two.
And it's always good exercise moving a ton of wood inside from outside.
Oh, yeah. Especially if it's red gum. That's not very sustainable, by the way, but it's very heavy.
And very warm.
Final thoughts, Kevin, on moving?
Don't. Just don't. As soon as you think about it, just take that thought, pack it in a box, throw it away, don't look at it again. Don't move if you don't have to. That's my thought.
Thank you very much for listening to us once again, now that the Cubby House has returned. Relocated in the Dungeon Studios, renovated in the Cookies Chateau. As we speak, we're on the verge of the Southern Hibernation event for 2010. By the time this podcast gets out, you may not be able to join us because it may already have happened. But do know that both Kevin and I are the official photographers this year, so we should be able to bring you some pretty interesting photos.
Backstage shots.
Well, if we can, we'll see what we can organise. But we are still located at thecubbyhouse.net.au. Our email is still podcast@thecubbyhouse.net.au. Keep an eye out for it, because it will be changing over the next couple of months. We are looking at rebranding everything. So keep an eye on us. We are still working with Joy 94.9. You can check out all their podcasts at joy.org.au. For tonight, thank you very much from Cookie.
And from Derek.
Thanks from Kevin.
And Andrew.
Have a good one. Catch you next show.
Keep in mind that you have named it Return of the Cubberwocky, and nothing in relation to that has been discussed. You might want to come up with another name.
How to remove your looking glass.
Cubs on the move.
No.
Ow!
Cubs about town.
I might actually call it Return of the Dungeon Studios.
You can't call it that. Your dungeon hasn't been set up yet. You've been most lax in that.
We shall see, my young Padawan. We shall see.
In fact, your dungeon's quite geeky at the moment.
It's allowed to be.
Not to mention the little kid stickers still around the room.
Oh, that really sets that it off room, wonderfully. Oh.
You should have got a significant discount for that room.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.